Hi, Dave. This is Shannon Ferguson. Just wanted to let you know that I've been listening to your podcast and really enjoying your episodes. Your insights in gaming are always interesting, and I'm always learning new words. And that ain't persiflage. Thanks.
Child out of the cold, and listen how the story's told. From fairy tales to happenstance, the dice rule every random chance. Take off your coat and stay a while, we're rolling that deep percentile.
Hi everyone, it's been a while. Again, everything's still going fine, very busy. Sorry, I haven't been able to put anything out maybe for nearly 2 weeks. I had to play that message from Shannon there. Thanks very much. Always great to have new callers. We engage a bit on Twitter. It's great to hear from you on the podcast. I got loads more messages. I keep apologising for this. At some point, I'm about to break up a bit for the summer and I'll have a bit of time to sit down and put things together. So thank you, Roy. There's a whole episode of Roy has been listening through the back catalogue. I will get those out. Lots of call-in responses. Still quite a lot on player expertise, which I will put together and put out. Sorry for the delay on those. They are all there. They are all very much appreciated. They will all get their airing. Just checking in really today. What have I been doing? I've agreed to get involved in BurritoCon. Is it BurritoCon I'm running? Yes, it is. BurritoCon I'm running next weekend, start of August. And I'm excited about that. Last year I was down to run a game at BurritoCon, got ill, couldn't run it. This one's virtual, but I'm going to be there. I've offered Savage Worlds. My Savage Worlds Kung Fu Cops went down quite well at Owlbear and Wizard Staff. I've offered a Savage Worlds dungeon game. Basically, I've just pitched it as how old school can we go with Savage Worlds. I've just got in the mood. You do every now and again. I was mucking about on Roll 20, got in the mood for a bit of tactical grid-based stuff. When you're in that mood, there's nothing to beat Savage Worlds, really. Just sort of gritting my teeth about my issues with Adventure Edition, because if you're going to pitch Savage Worlds, you may as well pitch teaching people Adventure Edition. I don't really like the way that the tests have panned out, but I've kind of got over it. I just think players have to learn when they're useful and when the various effects are useful, and just accept that they aren't always useful throughout the combat round. It's a little bit gamey. But I don't want to talk about that, but except that I'm excited to run my game, my old school Savage Worlds. I can imagine some people sort of crinkling up their face going, "What, really old school Savage Worlds?" But I'm going to run it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be violent and deadly. Yeah. And it's going to use lots of grid-based combat, lots of tactics. I think it'll be fun. What have I been doing apart from that? Yeah, running my games. Had to cancel Numenera last week. Just too many things to build up towards the end of term, even though I'm not taking a massive amount of leave. But we're still building up really towards the end of term at work. And yeah, it's just got hectic. I hope to be a little bit freer in August. Thinking about doing RPG a day. I didn't do it last year, although I did put something out every day in August. Looking at my recent output, I think it might be a bit bizarre to suggest I try and do something every day. But I might try and check in. Some people last year did RPG a day, but they bundled them up, put something out once a week, doing the various days. I might do that. It's not really in the spirit of the thing, but I might check in with that, or I might not. I had other ideas. I've been really closely reading Old School Essentials because I'm going to run a bit of that over the summer. And I thought of just, you get something different, don't you, on a really close reading of a game. Some games you run for years, you don't ever read them really closely. You can still be surprised by things. Old School Essentials, I've only run really a couple of games, a couple of con games. I'm looking forward to running a proper, I'm going to do a mega dungeon with it. And I've been reading it really closely in preparation. And I think that's quite good fun if you take some time to look at the monsters, look at the monster abilities. I mean, I've gradually been saying this as an old schooler who wasn't playing the old school games back in, well, it's the 80s when I started gaming. I wasn't playing D&D, I was playing other games. I enjoy my dungeon games, I enjoy the sort of new old school games, but understanding the whole ecology of a game is something I've only done really quite gradually. So I'm coming round on XP for gold as I've tried to run West March's games with other systems, and I'm coming round on some of the ways that it all joins up. But it's fun. It's fun reading and putting it all together. So I'll be looking at the spells. And I suppose my taste, if you ask me, my taste would be towards nice, really vaguely defined, simple, broad utility spells. Something like you've got in the Black Hack. Your cleric spells and your wizard spells are one page each. There's four or five per level, 10 levels, and they're all described with one line. And they have sort of maximal utility. You know, there's this sort of a really wide number of situations in which they're relevant. Old School Essentials and your BX game is quite different. The spells have a very... I mean, part of the fun, I know, of these old school spell lists is taking a spell description and testing it out in new and unforeseen situations. But in general, you look at those and they've got a much more bounded range of utility, which really goes a long way to defining the metaphysics of the game. I mean, you read those in relation to the monster list and you really get a sense of the implied game experience that is there. One thing I noticed about the spells in Old School Essentials is that they are, for the most part, they are minimal on the implied metaphysics front. So what I mean by that, you've got no astral projection, you've got no suggestive plane of travel, except that you've got contact higher plane, which I will talk about a bit. That's captured my imagination just recently. So I'll talk about that. But I noticed that these things must have come in with the older editions, with your Manual of the Planes and so on, the later editions in AD&D and so on. So that's one interesting thing. Things you notice on a close reading, all the things I've been understanding wrong. So I had never picked up that your wizard can't do anything with a scroll until they've cast read magic on it. Clerics can just read their magic scrolls, but a wizard can pick up a scroll. It's written in an indecipherable arcane script, and they actually have to cast a spell to decipher that. That would be a commonplace of people's experience of BX, but it's something in my previous readings I'd never picked up on before. I was like, oh, so I can see that, you know, magic users are going to end up gathering up the scrolls and then casting a spell when it's going to be maximally efficient, when they've got a little pile of scrolls, perhaps. What I mean by the implied game experience, you know, you look at spells like Remove Curse and you think, well, it's going to want to be a lot of curses, aren't there? I mean, it's not so hard because a cleric doesn't have to choose their spells. So it's not like a cleric invests in Remove Curse and you think, well, you know, they really want some curses, because, of course, the cleric can pick from the whole list. But you just look at things like that. You just look at the game, you go, oh, yeah, you know, Remove Curse is there. I mean, the whole divine aspect, the importance of the undead, you kind of need to remember that. I mean, it's obvious, old school gaming. There's going to be skeletons, there's going to be zombies. But you kind of think, no, actually, it's tied into the cleric, it's tied into the magic, that undead are a big feature of the dungeon experience. Little things like this I'm thinking about. Other things that I'd been, well, that I hadn't understood. I didn't realise that a lightning bolt reflected, for example, until I carefully read the spell description. That's quite a lot of fun. Both the possibility that a lightning bolt can reflect back on the caster if the caster casts it too near a solid surface, but also the possibility if you're just the right distance away from a solid surface and you cast your bolt in the direction of it, then, you know, if you're, say, 40 foot away, it'll only no, maybe it's, yeah, 40 foot would do it, because it's a 60 foot line. So if you've got a line of monsters, you can cast your lightning bolt, it will reflect back and it will hit them all twice as it goes towards the wall and away from the wall. I thought that was quite fun. So there are some sort of tactical implications of these spells, but in general they've got quite a bounded range of usefulness for the magic user. So they imply a particular kind of set of tasks that the party are going to be encountering, which I think you do well to pay attention to. And then I like, in newer games, I like my scene-breaking spells, those spells which can do something wild and really change the nature of the scene, or spells which give you a bit of a role-playing opportunity or just a little bit of a creative or imaginative opportunity. We've got a few of those. So the one I said I'd pick up on is Contact Higher Plane. This one's interesting, I suppose, because it does imply some planar metaphysics, but it's not the planar metaphysics which you'd be familiar with from reading Manual of the Planes. So there are these 12 higher planes, and you can contact someone from the third plane to the 12th plane, or contact an entity, I should say, and ask them a number of questions. I really like this. This is a very high-level magic user spell, but it's one of those ones which would give you an opportunity to really, you know, to really make a difference to the scene. And it's got some fun. I mean, there's no metaphysics offered about what's going on these planes, and I think, I mean, this is, as I say, this is, as I understand it, it doesn't really interact with your Manual of the Planes type stuff. I think it's more like just your standard Western occultism, you know, Dennis Wheatley type stuff, that souls gradually move through these higher planes of existence. But it's, as I say, it's a nice little push your luck game. You cast a spell and you can just choose which plane you're going to contact from the third to the 12th. With the danger being with the lower level entities, that they're more likely to lie to you and they're less likely to actually know the answer. You can't ask them as many questions either. Whereas with the higher level entities, I think as you move up through the planes in classic Western occultism, you refine your soul. So they're much less likely to be malicious and to lie to you. And they're more likely to know the answer. But the danger being, you know, they're so far distant from your understanding that you're more likely to drive yourself temporarily insane by contacting them. So all of this is done on a table of percentile results. So you're pushing your luck. Do you want to really make sure you get the answers that you want, but with the risk of the greater risk of temporary insanity, or do you want to minimize that risk but possibly get an ignorant or malicious entity to talk to? So I really enjoy the table there, and I like the way, you know, that's a nice tactical decision, and I can see the opportunities for role-playing and narrative fun as you interact with this entity. Looking at each entity's got a chip, so at each plane, you've got a number of questions you can ask, which increases as you go up through the planes. You've got a chance that the entity won't know the answer, which decreases as you go up through the planes, and a chance that the entity will lie to you, which decreases as you go up through the planes. Then you've got a percentile chance that you're going to be driven temporarily insane, which increases as you go up through the planes. And think about it, sort of, I mean, it's really neat how Gavin's got everything fitting on the page spreads in Old School Essentials, but it's sort of suggestive in terms of how you interpret the table. So I've been thinking about this. Okay, so there's a percentage chance. Usually the percentage chance they don't know is much bigger than the percentage chance they'll lie. And you just kind of think, well, what's the order of things? Do you roll the percentage chance that they don't know? And then if they do know, you then roll to see if they're lying. And in the end, I've decided the minimal interpretive leap is to simply just apply all of the results. So if you like, you could plot a little table of whether they know against whether they lie. Really, there are four possible outcomes. They don't know and they lie to you. You know, they tell you something anyway. They do know and they lie to you. Or they don't know and they tell you they don't know. Or they don't know and they lie to you. There you go. So there's your four possible outcomes. So I realised I don't need to know the order of things. You just roll both results and interpret that. But I thought that was a really fun spell. I may do more reflections as I closely read Old School Essentials, but I'm not going to promise a series or anything because, as you'll know, with all my various series, Summit comes up. I don't do anything for a couple of weeks and then I lose the impetus for the series. But maybe as I go through the monsters, as I have these kinds of reflections, I might share something with you. But I'm enjoying it, and I'm very much looking forward to getting stuck in to an Old School Essentials campaign. All right, yeah, addendum, listening back, I lost track of which quadrant was left in my little chart. Halfway through it, these things happen. You know what I meant. But I did have a couple of other thoughts. Didn't really make sense to save them to other episodes. So feeble mind, as I'm looking through, feeble mind, I'd not really noticed that as a spell. Again, it's a high level magic, arcane spell. And yeah, that just seems really powerful. Save or become an imbecile, a magic user, become useless. It's effectively a death spell for a magic user, depending on how you interpret permanent, of course. Has a permanent effect, so I'm wondering if permanent should just be permanent until you cast remove curse, for example. Does feeble mind count as a curse? I haven't decided on that one yet. But that's a brilliant spell for a wizard to have up their sleeve. And of course, I'm just going to let my dog out. He wants to come out and be with me. I'll probably bark even more. Come on, Eddie. I stop barking now anyway. Yeah, it's a great one for a wizard to have their sleeve. It's also a great one for a monster to have. I mean, that's the thing with all these spells, the particularly lethal ones. It's going to be a lethal game, even at high levels, because monsters have got access to the same spell list. It's just worth remembering. You get all the way up, so your magic user survives all the way up until they can take feeble mind. That's brilliant. You feel like you're really powerful. You go into the dungeon, someone casts it on you. You fail your save. It's a hard save. So life is always cheap. Yeah, there was feeble mind. What else was I going to talk about? Oh, yeah, that my realisation about read magic. That's actually triggered quite a lot of thinking, because you look at the thief. The thief at high levels has got a percentage chance to read a scroll. Yep, so they might fail to cast the scroll. But actually, how does that interact with the fact that a wizard doesn't even know what a scroll does until they've cast their read magic spell? How does that apply for the thief's percentage chance to read the scroll? Are they reading the scroll and they only know what it does at the same time as they read it? Do they have a percentage chance to read it to decipher the arcane script and then another one to cast it? Do they need a wizard to cast read magic on them to tell them what it is before they can have a go at reading it? And why? Why can a thief? Yeah, thieves have got these abilities with scripts, but why can a thief have a go at reading an arcane script when a wizard can't do it without magic? So that's something that's got me thinking. Any thoughts? But I enjoy these. I mean, these are just those kind of interpretive things which will define your table. I mean, with the lightning spell, I kind of went back and forth. You know, what's the intention here of telling us that it can reflect? Is it just to catch out the caster who casts it too near the wall, or is it to just give a nice tactical opportunity to really maximise that damage by potentially hitting all the beasts twice? Does that make it overpowered? And in the end, I just thought, no, just apply all the effects, because that's more fun. But yeah, that read magic thief's ability to potentially decipher scrolls has got me wondering. I haven't quite decided that one yet. Or how permanent feeble mind should be. Should it be, is it dispellable? I presume it is dispellable, actually. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. You could dispel it. It's a persistent magical effect. Yeah, maybe that makes sense. It's not a curse. Anyway, people have got thoughts, do call in. I'll get round to them eventually. Thanks for listening. Keep well, everyone.
Hey there, Dave. It's John here. I'm just listening to your Old School Summer episode. I'm about a third of the way through now. And I've got to say, yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I'm also reading Old School Essentials at the moment, and I'm finding it very interesting and enlightening, sort of going back and seeing how that fits together, as well as realizing that what I took to be my sort of D&D knowledge, in inverted commas, is actually a mishmash of the various different OSR clones and games that I've read. So it's actually nice to go back to a sort of faithful version of the original rules, albeit formatted slightly better for modern sensibilities, and read through that, see how it fits together in the sort of ecology of the game. So couldn't agree more, dude. Just wanted to drop you a quick message and let you know I'm enjoying the episode. I'm going to get back to listening to it. Take care.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact Dave, please leave a message on Anchor, email dpercentile@gmail.com or find him on Twitter @d_percentile.